Kaya Wanju, Big Girl here with you for the next hour on Health Matters, taking on health issues affecting Aboriginal people, yes, our mob. Hey, did you know that the rate of asthma among Indigenous Australians, yes, our mob, is almost twice as high as that of non-Indigenous Australians, yes, Wadjalla mob. Great to have you listening. Whether you are Wadjalla, whether you're Noongar, Aboriginal, doesn't make a difference, because asthma's a huge thing globally, and that fact alone, almost twice as high as that of a non-Indigenous Australian, is alarming. Look, today I'll yarn with our special guests in the studio, Mark Everett and also Russell Cox, about asthma. And I'd like to welcome them both to the program. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you very much. Very pleased to be here.
It's good to have you here talking about asthma. And Russell, welcome also.
Thanks for having me along.
That's okay. It's going to be a very interesting show, as it always is, because we're hitting home on a lot of health matters that do affect our mob. And we hope that you listen up. And if it doesn't relate to you and your health situation, perhaps it relates to someone in the family, at work, or a friend, so you can pass on the information. Now, Mark, if I could start with you first, if I could get some information as, let's say, where are you working at the moment in terms of asthma, and why are you so passionate about it?
So my background is I'm a children's doctor with an interest in respiratory work, and I work up at Princess Margaret Hospital, but also work at the university doing research into asthma and related diseases. Asthma is very common. It's often mistaken for other conditions, and equally, people don't make the diagnosis. And really, what should be pretty straightforward condition to manage is often not done as well as we should. And therefore, I'm passionate about trying to improve care of asthma generally.
Thanks. How long have you been in the field?
Oh, far too long. probably 25 years.
Ah, giving away age there. Russell, and you, where do you come from?
So I come from the Asthma Foundation. I'm a training and education officer there. So our whole team is passionate about helping people breathe better. A lot of people underestimate asthma, and it can go from very mild to very severe in a short time. And as Mark's saying, it affects a lot of people. We're looking at 1 in 10 people, 1 in 9 children as well. So it is really, really common. And as you say, with your mob out in the community as well, it's really prevalent.
Definitely. Now, Mark, you said that asthma is sometimes recognised as perhaps other things as well. So let's just get it out there. What exactly is asthma?
That's a $64,000 question.
I got no money, so.
No, sadly
I'm a freebie, thank you.
We've been trying to define it forever and keep going round in circles. But the key thing that makes it different to everything else is that the muscles in our lungs close off in asthma. Lots of other things make us short of breath or cough or produce phlegm. But the one thing that's really different about asthma is that the muscles go into spasm and make it very difficult to breathe. Usually we produce inflammation and secretions and a bit of phlegm as well, but it's that sudden tightening of the airways that makes it so different to any other respiratory condition.
So between you both, Mark, while we're talking to you, what are the causes for asthma attacks?
The cause for asthma is unknown. You can develop asthma at any age. You can start at 1, or you can start at 34 or 56. Once you've started having problems, the triggers vary from patient to patient or individual. So some people find that they're very allergic to certain things like house dust mite and dust. Others will be exercise will bring it on, but they're not allergic to anything else. And for most people, the thing that brings on the bad attacks are colds, viruses. So the ones that people get into trouble with generally are because of having picked up a virus, and that sets your asthma off, and it's difficult to get on top of the symptoms, whereas most of the other conditions you usually settle down fairly quickly if you take your inhalers.
Mm. Hey, Russell, I'm sure you're nodding your head. Yeah, that's all true. That's all true. But also, it's said that some people with asthma have a history of eczema. Is that true? Or
look, there can be strong relationships between allergies and eczema, those kind of things as well. But as Mark's saying, it can affect anyone at any point in their lifetimes. I don't have asthma personally, but I could develop it. And you can develop it when you're younger, when you're older as well. And there are linked conditions. So, you know, it can raise the likelihood that you might develop it. If you do have those conditions, it's about keeping them in check, making sure they're well managed, and also making sure that you're taking your medications as well properly for your asthma.
Here's a big one. Is it hereditary?
It's certainly more common in families. So if you've got one or two parents with asthma, you're more likely to develop it. But it's certainly not hereditary in the sense that cystic fibrosis or other conditions are hereditary. So it's more likely if it's in the family, but it doesn't mean you're going to have it.
When you say that an asthma attack can occur perhaps through exercise, that sounds really weird to me. How is that? Because we're trying to get mob to exercise more for a healthier outcome, but then asthma.
So when you exercise, you breathe hard, and what people with asthma tend to find is if they're working hard for 6 to 8 minutes often, they start actually drying out their airways, and that gets the twitchy airways to start closing up. It's generally very easy to prevent that by taking a medicine like Ventolin beforehand or taking your preventers regularly. So we would really strongly recommend exercise. You just need to manage your asthma to allow you to do it.
I'm glad you said that. Yes, we encourage, but be cautious and make sure that you take your puffers. Look, we're going to be talking about puffers, and I really want to get some information on the puffers because if they're not taken correctly, that could lead to problems. So we're going to come back and have a yarn more about asthma on Health Matters. But right now, Bob Marley and the Wailers, Three Little Birds.
About the same.
sound of Bob Marley and the Wailers, Three Little Birds, or some people call it Don't Worry, Be Happy, Everything's Gonna Be Alright. You're with me, Big Girl, on Health Matters. Talking about asthma today with both Mark and Russell, experts in the field. And we said we'd come back and talk about the inhalers and the proper way to use them. Russell, it's pretty hard to describe it on radio perhaps, but why is it so important that people use their puffers the right way? And what is the right way?
Well, for one, with reliever medications, that's your blue medications like Ventolin, Salbutamol, Asmol. There's loads of different names for those. We encourage people to use them for a spacer.
What's a spacer?
So spacer is a chamber which helps you deliver the medication to your lungs properly. So it's kind of like the middle ground between the device and your mouth. Slows that down, because if anyone out there has been used a puffer before, it comes out extremely quickly. And we find that people with asthma, even with their best technique, don't get the medication to their lungs because they press the canister and most of it hits the back of their throat and they swallow it. So it's really important to use a spacer with relievers and also preventers if it's a similar style medication. So if it's a puffer, you should be using a spacer with that as well.
Mark, do you think many people do forget to take their puffers, their medication?
That's probably normal human behaviour. I don't know anybody who takes all their medicines as they're supposed to do, and that's a real challenge in a chronic disease. We know with asthma that if you have regular significant symptoms, you have to take at least 11 out of 14 doses in a week if you're taking morning and night. So that's only missing about three a week, which isn't very many. And life's busy. It's complicated. If you've got family, trying to get kids to school, it's easy to forget. And so people don't often deliberately not take it. It's just that it's hard to build it into a routine. But if you miss more than those three doses, then it really does affect how much trouble you have with your asthma.
I get asthma, but I don't get it throughout the year. I'm one of these people that will be set off by my mother's perfume.
Yeah.
She doesn't buy it no more. Or strong chemicals, and also humid weather.
Yeah.
Let's talk about those other things that can trigger asthma off. I believe maybe food allergies to some things.
Some people, that's food allergies causing respiratory problems are less common than the inhaled issues, as you mentioned, perfumes and chemicals and pollens and things that you breathe in. So the lung tends to respond more to those than the things you eat, but it can happen. And if you're allergic to just about anything, it can affect your lungs as well. So some people do have food allergies that set it off. And your pattern is an example of why every patient with asthma is slightly different, because we tend to think of a disease asthma, but you have people who are without their regular treatment or in hospital every few weeks, have it up every night, and you have other people who twice a year get quite tight but never really bad, and you have everything in between. So the right management depends on how much problem somebody's having.
Asthma sounds like hard work in terms of, we're talking about dust mites, but I'm imagining that you'd have to make sure that the carpet would have to be cleaned, the bedding and things like that. Clean air.
Clean air's good,
yep,
for sure. So trying to avoid cigarette smoke or burning off fires and that sort of thing.
Is that passive smoking as well, or is that just...
For sure.
Yep.
I think anything that irritates the lungs and any form of smoke, whether it be coal fire or forest fire or tobacco smoke, irritates the lungs. So clean air is good. But in terms of asthma, doing the simple things well is always the way to go. So having the diagnosis right, then taking your treatment, your preventers if you need them, regularly, deals with most of the issues. Trying to be obsessional about allergies is really difficult. If you've got a cat and you're allergic to a cat, then you have to weigh up, do I take my treatment every day and keep the cat, or do I get rid of the cat and still not take my treatment every day? Those sort of decisions. And actually doing the simple things well, taking your inhalers properly and taking them every day, for vast majority of people, keeps them really well, and you don't have to make it complicated.
Mm. Thanks for that, Mark.
What you mentioned, everything we're talking about right now are triggers. So you could have one or more of those. From what you're describing, you have two or three of those. Someone could have more than that. Someone could have left. And, yeah, asthma is very individual. Everyone has, you know, very different triggers as well. And it basically comes down to trying to keep on top of taking your medications and making your airways less sensitive to those triggers as well.
Taking it way, way back, if people have symptoms of asthma, is it the GP they go to or a specialist? Where does a person first start?
Generally, people will go to their GP first, and GPs have to deal with lots of problems. So some will be more interested in asthma than others, but it's certainly the place to start in terms of if you have concerns about breathing problems, excessive coughing and so on, and hopefully you will get good advice. And working in a hospital, we tend to get people who are still having trouble despite that advice, so we see the more troublesome end of the spectrum.
So as a doctor, Mark, what are some of the tests that you would do to see and tell someone that they have or have not got asthma?
As I mentioned before, we don't know exactly what asthma is, why some people's airways muscles are really twitchy and others aren't. So you could give me lots and lots of histamine, and it will do very little to me, but give it to an asthmatic and they can get into a lot of trouble. So something's not keeping the airways as they should. But we can't just do a blood test and say, you've got asthma, you haven't got asthma. We wish, because that would make life much easier.
So what do you do? Breathing?
So you can essentially define asthma as something that gets dramatically and unequivocally better with asthma treatment. So if you are really short of breath and wheezy and you take something like Ventolin and you're dramatically better, you've probably got asthma. If you're a bit better, you may have it, you may not. If you're old enough, and for children that's older than about six, and you can do lung function, then we will do breathing tests to try and confirm it. But for many others, it'll be starting something like an inhaled steroid. And again, the difference isn't I'm a bit better, I'm sleeping a bit better, I'm not coughing so much. It's a dramatic and unequivocal. So if somebody has quite a lot of trouble and suddenly they say, oh, I feel so much better since starting that, then they've got asthma. And that's about as scientific as we get.
We're going to talk about asthma attacks and what should be the plan when somebody does have an asthma attack in just a minute. But Russell, just for you, Dan Salton, Cadillac and a Mustang. Russell wants to rock it up, so that's what we're going to do right now on Health Matters. I was sitting on the corner of Mission and 20 when I bought my super burrito to cool down. And I could see two cars sitting side by side, and I could hear that rumbling sound. It was a Cadillac and a Mustang. I'm talking Cadillac and a Mustang. Wow.
conversation.
He's talking Cadillac and a Mustang, but we're talking about asthma. And yes, asthma amongst Indigenous Australians is almost twice as high as that of non-Indigenous Australians. And you're with me, Big Girl, on Health Matters, coming out of Noongar Radio every fortnight, 11 o'clock on a Wednesday, repeating on Sunday night at 9 o'clock. And we're going to talk about asthma attacks. How do you know, guys, if one is about to come your way, flaring up? What are some of the signs?
Signs and Russell? Symptoms, there's four common ones. So a dry, persistent cough, tightness of chest. I'm going blank now. Shortness of breath as well. Those kind of signs and symptoms come on. You need to be taking your blue reliever or whatever medication you've had prescribed for that as well. So it can come on quite quickly, or it can happen over a number of days. It just depends on the circumstance. So, but yeah, keeping an eye out for those kind of symptoms and making sure that you have your medication with you at all times.
So, Mark, you work with children who have asthma. Are the symptoms in children different from those in adults?
Pretty much the same. It's just that the things you can confuse asthma with are slightly different in children. So in adults, chronic COPD, for example, is often mistook for asthma, and vice versa. But in young children, the commonest reason to have problems with your chest is having bad virus infections. So it's very common for somebody who doesn't have asthma to develop breathing trouble in the first year or two of life, get wheezy, turn up in hospital. And they basically have a snotty lung. If you try, imagine a baby trying to breathe through a snotty nose, and the lungs are full of that stuff, then it's hard to breathe and they can get wheezy. And the asthmatics look very, very similar, because with a virus, they have an attack and they get the same sort of snottiness, but they also get the spasm. And the real challenge in the under fives, the preschoolers, is trying to pick the one who definitely has asthma from the other children. And that requires a bit of trial and error with treatment, listening to see if they're having problems between colds and so on. So in the under fives, it can be tricky. Many of the majority of children at one who wheeze don't have asthma, but that tendency to have problems just with viruses fades. And by the time you're five, most children who are wheezy with colds probably do have asthma. So your probability increases over that period if you're still wheezy.
Can you be born with asthma?
Well, it's interesting, because we see very few children who seem to respond to asthma treatment in the first year of life, which does seem to suggest that you're born with a tendency to develop it and something brings it on. And the reason for thinking that also is, if you look in different parts of the world with less westernized lifestyles, you see less asthma, but that's largely related to less allergies. There's something about developing allergies that brings out asthma in people. But as I said before, many people without allergies also have asthma. So you can have allergies without asthma, you can have asthma without allergies, but quite a lot of people have both.
Mm. Let's talk about the, having an asthma attack. If it's a severe one, when do you get to a point where you ring an ambulance?
So in my mind, there's two sorts of problems with asthma. One is that when you're not taking your inhalers or you're not very well controlled, you can go up and down quite quickly. If you run around, get a bit shortness of breath, you take your blue inhaler and you get better. You go near a cat and you start wheezing, you take your inhaler, you get better very quickly. And that's poor control. Typically, though, a bad attack will be usually a virus, but very occasionally it'll be a bad allergy. And during those, you can take your Ventolin, your blue puffer, and not get much better. Your lungs sort of get locked down. And if you're taking more and more inhalers and really not getting better, that's the time that you probably need something else like a steroid tablet or liquid to try and get you better. So if you get better and stay well, that's great. You don't need to go and get urgent help, but maybe you just need to improve your control. But if you are taking lots of your blue puffer and really not getting back to your best and you're getting worse, that's the time you need to see somebody.
Mm. Russell, tell me, can you die from asthma?
Yes, you can. And again, it's about making sure you have your taking your medications and being prepared as well. So what Mark's describing is completely right. It can be quite severe at points, and there's certain signs and symptoms that we were mentioning before that you need to look out for. One I didn't mention and Mark had said a couple of times was a wheeze as well, with that shortness of breath, tight chest as well. So it can be serious, and we find that people really discount it sometimes. For me, many asthmatics that go, oh, I just have mild asthma. And it can go from mild to severe in a very short time. So it's being prepared and knowing what to do in that circumstance as well.
Mm. If we're stuck and it is an emergency and someone is going blue perhaps, or really cannot breathe, and they've tried their Ventolin, their blue puff, or whatever else they're on, we have to ring an ambulance. Is there anything that we should be doing, maybe if a parent is there or carer, with the person before the ambulance comes, something like asthma first aid?
Yeah, asthma first aid is really, really important. So, yeah, call that ambulance, get their reliever medication. If they can take it themselves, great, but otherwise assist them. Using a spacer with the puffer as well, it's 4 puffs and 4 breaths, so 4 times. So some people out there might have heard of the 4x4x4 rule. We keep doing that, so we give 4 puffs of the blue reliever medication 4 times, and then we wait for 4 minutes. Now, if they don't improve or the signs and symptoms get worse in that time, we go again. So we do another 4 of those as well. Now, if there's no improvement after that point, that's when we generally tend to call an ambulance. But if anything concerns you, or if anything changes quickly, or someone deteriorates, like you're saying, if they turn blue or they're struggling for breath, definitely call an ambulance. Because at the end of the day, even if one of your friends or family members is having an asthma attack, it seems severe at the time, you've called the ambulance, and then they improve, well, the ambulance will turn up and they can just go on their way as well. But it's really important to be prepared for that as well. We've got lots of information about asthma first aid on our website.
That was my next question. I want to know more about the role of the Asthma Foundation.
Sure.
Because a lot of what we've spoken about today is about education and just practical stuff. So can you assist families that have asthma?
Yep, so we've been in the community for more than 50 years now, and we provide one-on-one education for families, as well as information on our website, group information sessions as well. So we have lots of resources there. We also have a helpline phone number as well, which is 1-800-ASTHMA, which anyone can call. You can email us as well. But yeah, we're quite active in the community, and again, we're out there trying to improve health outcomes for people that have asthma.
What's the website address?
So it's Asthma Australia. If you just Google it, asthmaaustralia.com, and just follow the links to WA.
We're going to go to a song before I have an asthma attack. Matters here with me, Big Girl Noongar Radio. That's the sound of Phil Wally Stack, man of culture. And today on Health Matters, we're talking about asthma. And I've just got some really good advice off here. I'm going to take that. Thank you very much, Mark. Because sometimes, because I've been diagnosed with asthma, but I don't have it all the time. And some of my triggers are my mum's perfume. As I said, because it's a really strong one, and some other ones as well. And I literally 30 seconds of inhaling that, or being around them, and I have a really dry throat. It feels like my tongue is doubling up in my airways. And yeah, I just have a puffer, and sometimes it helps and sometimes that does. So I guess from my point of view, where should I be going? Because, you know, we're talking about I might have been diagnosed wrongly. I might have something else. What should people be doing? And especially if people think they have something else and in turn they do have asthma. Tricky one.
It is.
I'm giving them all to you today, Mark.
Yeah.
You're the doctor in the house.
Trying to find somebody with an interest. So many people think asthma is sorted and just take the inhaler and you'll be fine. But we know from all the statistics that all across all populations in Australia, we do badly by international standards. So there's something we're not doing right. And if you look at countries like Finland, where they really have sorted it, they just went out and decided they were going to do the simple things well, get the diagnosis right, which for anybody above 5 or 6 involves spirometry, and then make sure that the patient's got the same advice. Because one of the things that drives patients mad is seeing different doctors who say, no, you don't take your inhaler that way, you take it this way, don't do that, do that. And it creates uncertainty. And yet the advice should be very simple, very consistent. And somehow we've got to establish that in WA to deal with the fact that we're still not managing asthma as well as it can be done.
I might talk to you a bit more because, as I was saying, you know, I sang for years in a band, and that's the reason why, you know, I no longer sing, perform because of that, because it's not good having a coughing fit, as my mother calls them, in the middle of a song, and I had to talk to you later. What else should we mention about asthma that would be of great benefit to our audience today? Do you think, Russell?
I think again we've already touched on making sure you take your medications. We didn't really talk so much about preventers, but they are really one of the keys to staying well. So they're the awesome coloured, desert coloured medications, so your oranges and browns and those kind of colours. They do take some time to reach full effect, so when you take your Ventolin or your blue puffer, a lot of people think that's the thing that works, because it works very quickly in 4 minutes, and that's why we wait that 4 minutes when we do asthma first aid as well, to see if it's working. But with preventers, they do take some time to reach full effect, and people might not be feeling that instant effect that they're used to with their blue relievers. So one of the really important things we want to convey is making sure that people try and stay on top of taking their medications as much as they can.
Can we talk about the weather?
Yeah.
And does that affect asthma? Can it? Because it's raining today. Yesterday it was quite warm. I had the aircon on. From what you know and what you've seen, Mark, what's your thoughts on the weather changes?
Parents report consistently that their children have more trouble when the weather changes. I don't know any mechanism for that, but I'm certainly not going to ignore something that I'm told on a regular basis. We know things like thunderstorms are associated with increased admissions to hospital, because it's thought it stirs up a lot of pollen and puts that up into the air. We know burning off tends to make things worse, but exactly how weather changes asthma is unclear. Asthma tends to be worse when it's cold and dry, which we don't get a lot of here compared with Scandinavia or the UK where I come from. But cold mornings, the air here is very dry, and that can certainly trigger some people who've got poor control and feel worse in the mornings because of the cold.
That makes sense. Mildew is a big one for me as well.
Sure. So
it gets me out of cleaning the shower.
It's a good excuse.
And there's good evidence that allergy to mould is associated with more troublesome asthma. So damp houses and so on, definitely associated with more troublesome symptoms.
Both of you, can we explain that little machine? I think it's called a nebulizer. What does it do? Why do we need it when we've got puffers?
I'll let you say this one, Mark.
Okay, so nebulizers are a way of getting droplets so that you can inhale them. They are simple, straightforward, and you can put a big dose in them. So we use them in cystic fibrosis to give big doses of antibiotics. In asthma now, we rarely use them other than for very severe attacks, because there's study after study showing that if you use a spacer, you can manage asthma equally as well. There's nothing magical about a nebulizer other than you can just put a lot of medicine in it and just sit there and breathe it in. They're rarely used now, apart from the most severe end where people are really struggling to breathe and can't use other inhalers.
And again, a spacer, they are fantastic.
Yeah.
Another thing when you're administering your puffers is some of the residue will get on your throat. So I used to get thrush quite a bit in the mouth from that. So I'd have a drink of water, but I find with the spacer it was a lot better for me. And a spacer, again, your mob listening, it's just a plastic device. You put your puffer on one end and you administer the puffs, and then you put the other one in your mouth. And, yeah, it's like a separator type thing.
I think
it's a funny looking thing.
It isn't sort of salutary to remember that the inhalers we use are more than 70 year old. Mm. They're ancient technology, and we spend a huge amount of time and effort trying to show people how to use something that really should have been obsolete. In music, we don't carry around vinyl, big bags of vinyl. We've gone through tapes, we've gone through CDs, and now we've got them on our phones. And yet, in the same time, inhalers haven't changed at all. And they're not user-friendly. You have to use them correctly for them to work. And that's particularly so for the preventers. With your Ventolin, because it's so potent, you can use your puffer not very well, and it works, and if it doesn't, you take a bit more. So people think, oh, well, I can get away with my spacer because I don't need it for my Ventolin. But with your steroid, it's really, really important to use them inhalers properly, and spacers are a way of trying to deal with the problem of those puffers where people have to coordinate properly and try not to get the thrush and the hoarseness that they can get if it goes straight in the back of the throat.
Mm. And you mentioned a really important point, because you can develop thrush, you can get hoarse throat as well, and it's really important when you use your preventive medications to rinse, gargle and spit, so you don't develop those kind of symptoms as well.
Somebody told me there's an asthma plan.
Yep.
And it's really important, Russell. You're having this one.
Yeah, asthma action plans are really important, and a lot of people think they're just for kids. Basically, they're a written set of instructions telling you exactly what to do when your asthma symptoms are going okay, when you're not feeling so well, and also when they're severe. So a GP will complete that and sign off on that. You do hear a lot of kids taking them to school, so they know what to do. Teachers know what to do in an emergency and how to manage a child's asthma. But they're also really helpful for adults as well, because for one, you can put it on the fridge, you know exactly what to do in each situation as well. It's a really simple thing to have, and it's something that you can talk to your GP about getting if you don't already have one. But yeah, it is a written set of instructions that can really help you manage your condition better.
There you go. If you've got asthma or someone in the family, you should definitely get one of those, especially if you've got children, because that's another point too. You're not always with your kid. You know, so the people that are with your kid at times, like teachers and that, need to know what the plan is, you know. So,
Yeah, teachers...
Sounds like there's a lot of responsibility with asthma and, you know, controlling it.
Teachers play a really important part, and they do request annual asthma action plans, so they know what to do in that kind of situation. We actually go out to schools and teach asthma first aid and how to manage it within the school environments. There's lots of schools in Perth that do it. So if you have children and family members that go to school and, you know, want asthma training, well, we can go into schools and do that. It's totally free.
And again, your contact numbers?
Yeah, 1-800-ASTHMA, or just go to the Asthma Australia website and just follow the links to Western Australia, or you can just email us as well.
Deadly. Another question, why do you mob think that the number is almost twice as high in Indigenous people?
We wish we knew.
It's
we don't know why some people develop asthma, and we certainly, some children will be asthmatic and grow out of it, potentially come back later on in life. So it's really so difficult to know. We don't know how we can prevent it. All we know at the moment is when it's a problem, we can control it on the right treatment, just doing the simple things well.
We're going to go to Keith Urban, the fighter, and come back and do a wrap-up of Health Matters, and speaking with Mark and Russell today on a very important health matter for everybody, but it is alarming that nearly twice as many of my mob do suffer from asthma. So Keith Urban, the fighter. I guess asthma sufferers would have to be fighters. Hey, Mark and Russell, seems really a lot to do and a lot of responsibility. I did use that word because, you know, you've got to keep on top of your puffers. So, Mark, you're a doctor. What would you say to people out there that either suffer from asthma or have children, family members that suffer with asthma? How can they help themselves, or how can they help their family?
Getting the diagnosis right and taking your medication regularly. It's you can treat asthma really well with steroid tablets or liquid, but you're going to have side effects, and that's what people did before we had inhaled steroids. The inhaled steroids allow us to treat asthma without getting side effects if you use sensible doses. But the downside is that they are quite slow to work. So instead of working within 2 or 3 days like a big dose of oral, they take 4 or 5 weeks at least to be really effective. And if you come off them within 3 or 4 days, it's like you've never been on them. So it's just building that routine and taking the inhaler properly is so important. There's lots of other things like trying to avoid smoke and where there's an obvious trigger, trying to make sure, such as taking those away. But doing the simple thing well, getting in a routine and remembering is really important. Problem with children can be that they're real battlers, so they can put up with an awful lot and are actually in quite a lot of trouble and not complaining a lot, because that's what children are like often. They'll just get on with it. And then they're at considerable risk when they get a virus, because they're already not very well, and then they fall from there. So just because your child's going to school and not complaining very much doesn't mean that things are fine. You need to be tuned into the fact they're waking up most nights, because nighttime waking is a real marker for poorly controlled asthma. They're having to stop when their friends are carrying on playing, being aware that actually they're not having a normal life and it's impacting on them, and then getting on top of that.
Mm. And Russell, what's your message from the Asthma Foundation to families affected by asthma?
Look, for one, I just want to echo Mark's comments there about making sure you take your medications where you can, being aware of what may trigger family members and friends, such as bushfire smoke, cigarette smoke, or, even with yourself, perfumes, that kind of thing. It's just being mindful of what triggers people as well. And the Asthma Foundation is here for the community. Like we're saying before, our phone number is 1-800-ASTHMA, which is 9289-3600. You can always give us a call and we can have a chat with you. We're out there in the community chatting to people as well. So, you can get in touch with us if you have any questions about your asthma.
We've been talking on asthma today, which a lot of mob live with, in fact almost twice as high as that of a non-Indigenous Australian. Thanks to the guests today, Russell Cox and Mark Everard, for their time coming into the studio and to talk on this serious health matter that affects the lives of many people, not just Indigenous people. For more information on asthma and many other health issues, visit, if you would like more information on today's program as well, you can visit healthywa.wa.gov.au or the Asthma Foundation on asthmaaustralia.org.au, or you can give them a call on 9289-3600. Do remember that all severe or life-threatening asthma attacks may require urgent medical attention. Always dial 000 to call an ambulance in a medical emergency, and then follow the asthma first aid plan, which we touched on as well. You've been listening to Health Matters, which comes to you from the studios of 100.9 Noongar Radio every fortnight on a Wednesday at 11 till 12, replaying on a Sunday night at 9 o'clock. Big Girl signing off for now. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Russell.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great information, and great to have you both in the studio today. Thank you so much. I'm signing off. Don't forget, get your regular checkups. Don't be shame or slow to act. Stay healthy. Noongar. Good afternoon.